Welcome, welcome. I'm so happy to be with all of you today. Before we jump in, I just want to remind you guys that next Monday, April 8th, at 3 p.m. Eastern, we have another one of our special guest teacher calls. We're going to be with Rhea Wright, who is a graduate of the Sacred Depths coaching certification. And she's also been a psychotherapist for the last 25 years and has been a private client of mine, and we've just connected in many ways. She's just phenomenal, such a wise woman. And I brought her in so that we could have a really rich and informative conversation about the scope of coaching versus the scope of therapy. I know that's a question that comes up a lot, and you know, there's some kind of tentativeness around it and fear and what's the line and how do you know and, you know, all of that. And so Rhea and I are going to be getting into all of those details. If you can make it live, please be there because you'll get to ask questions. It's just a great opportunity so that you can get all your questions answered by her. If not, you know, we'll have the recording for you in the member center. But if that's not already on your calendar, please mark it for next Monday at 3 Eastern. Okay. So today we are beginning a big module. It's kind of our next big section. We're going to be moving through it for a while. This is some of the juicy stuff. In this big section, it encompasses resistance, which we're going to be looking at today. It encompasses the befriend your fear process that I've developed to help clients really work with their fear. We'll be getting to that later in April. It encompasses the rewire your negative thought patterns process to help clients really work with their beliefs. We'll be getting to that. It includes helping clients get off the wheel of self-sabotage. I've got a process for that. We'll be looking at myth of perfection. We'll be looking at creating accountability structures and so much more. So in other words, the next few months where, so far in the program, we've really looked at a lot of the core and foundational skills and some more advanced ones as well. But where we're going next in the training is I'm going to be giving you lots of different protocols and ideas and tools and techniques to support your clients through their biggest obstacles. And there's going to be some overlapping among the topics too, but I'm going to be giving you lots of different ways to create awareness and transformation with clients, especially when there's just resistance in many different forms. All that we're going to be going through over the next few months takes some skill, and we had to get through everything we've been looking at so far in the program to get to this place. So we're going to be, get ready, because if you think that we've already done a deep dive, we're actually going to be diving much, much deeper over the next few months. So what we're looking at today, the topic of today's call is navigating client resistance and the resistance archetypes that I've developed. So why is it so important to know how to coach your clients through resistance? Well, when resistance shows up, if you're not well equipped to handle and navigate the resistance, it is very not fun for you as the coach or the practitioner. In fact, most practitioners these days don't really know how to handle client resistance, and it's because they don't really understand resistance. And if you don't understand the client motivation behind resistance, and if you don't know how to masterfully move your clients through resistance, then you're going to end up feeling drained and tired and frustrated and questioning your confidence and your abilities you're going to maybe find yourself overthinking your client's situation, thinking about it even when you don't want to be thinking about it and worrying about it. And not to mention, when you don't know how to move your clients through resistance, your clients can end up frustrated or upset with you, or maybe even lose hope in the coaching. Not knowing how to navigate clients through resistance is a major factor in low attrition rates for coaching programs and coaching work, low referral rates, in having clients want to quit, in questioning yourself. It's actually not knowing how to navigate clients through resistance is a major factor in putting so many restrictions on who your ideal clients are that you cut out 70% of the ideal prospects out there. So there are a lot of different ways to understand and to define resistance. And over the next few months, we're going to be looking at all of them. But for today's class, I'm using and defining resistance in a very particular way. And so I want to just first be clear on that, on the particular lens that we're looking at this through today. The resistance that I'm talking about today, when I talk about resistance archetypes, is, yes, it's resistance that a client has towards moving towards her goals, but it's not just any old kind of resistance towards taking action to their goals. The particular type of resistance that I'm talking about today is that when obstacles come up for your client, you as the coach feel that you don't have the green light from your client to continue working on the obstacles or on the goals, right? So this is different from just like plain old obstacles that come up in the coaching conversation, plain old fears that come up that you've got the green light to look at, to unpack, to talk about with your clients. We're going to be talking about those in a lot of the coming sessions. But actually, the resistance that we're starting with, that's, you know, today, this is a much sneakier kind of resistance. It's the kind where it feels as if your client's resistance to their goal is coming out, is being expressed as a resistance to the actual coaching or communication with you, or a resistance to you as the coach itself. I'm going to say that again. The resistance that we're going to look at today is really sneaky, because the way that it gets expressed and the reason why you feel like you don't have a green light on it is because it gets expressed as a resistance to you as the coach. The client is resisting you without being so cognizant of it, or the coaching itself. This kind of resistance is so sneaky that it can actually bring the coaching that you're doing to a halt, to a stop, if you don't address it correctly. It's the obstacles that come up with this kind of resistance create a tension in the coaching relationship itself. And one of the reasons, like I said, why it's so tricky is that your client may not even realize that this is happening. The way that it gets expressed often points to a persistent dynamic or way of being that has been your client's MO for a long time. And in the second half of this call, we're going to really unpack that a lot. So in other words, if you find that a certain type of resistance comes up to you as the coach or the coaching itself, if the client shows up as the judge, if the client shows up as the victim, if the client shows up as the confused one, you know, all of those, then chances are it's not the first time that this kind of archetypal behavior has come up for your client, chances are that they've used this behavior, this resistance, as a mask before, or a way of avoiding moving forward in the past. Now, there are really nearly endless ways that resistance can manifest in a client's behavior towards you or towards the coaching process. And I'm just going to give you some examples of some of the most common behaviors at the surface layer of this kind of resistance. So what I'm talking about is, for example, when a client just doesn't show up on time, not once, you know, they happen to be late once, but it's like consistently and persistently they're not showing up on time. Or when a client is consistently canceling the coaching session at the last minute, or not even canceling it, just not showing up at all. When a client is having a bad attitude, again, not to their goals, but it almost feels like it's a bad attitude towards the coaching that you're doing, the work that you're doing together, or to you. If a client is consistently just not paying attention to the action steps in the homework, if you sense that they're getting upset at you because they're not getting the results that they want, if they seem to be stuck in confusion, not like general confusion, but something like you, that the two of you have spoken about and you laid it out step by step by step, and yet still the client is confused, that might be a sign of the kind of resistance that we're talking about today. If you hear things like, I just don't know why we're setting out the actions that we're setting, right? Like constantly, like, I don't like the strategy. Why are we doing this strategy? That kind of thing. If you hear things, I mean, nobody these days literally says, woe is me, right? But if you hear things like, this is awful, this is too hard, everything is against me, I can't, you know, I can't take it, right? That might be a sign. If you hear something like, even if it's not these exact words, but there's an energy behind your client's words of, you didn't help me enough. If there's a feeling of, you know, the plan that you suggested, right, if they're, you know, to you, coach, the plan that you suggested just wasn't good enough. If there's a complainy feeling of, why aren't we moving more quickly here, right, not in a balanced way to talk about it, but almost in a backhanded way, right? Again, because I'm talking about the things that you don't have a green light yet to talk about, they're being dealt up in these kind of like backhanded, sneaky ways, right? Or any kind of feeling that they might implying that you, the coach, isn't doing enough or showing up enough. Or, you know, this is too hard for me. Everything is harder for me than for everyone else. Or if, you know, they are saying, again, like in a backhanded way, something that feels like, I'm really not sure that this investment in the coaching is worthwhile. All of those examples likely point to resistance. So take a moment and just think about yourself and the examples I just gave. And think about current goals that you have. What are the ways that resistance might be manifesting for you right now? This kind of resistance where it's like a resistance to, it could be me, right, or this program or another coach you're working with or any practitioner or anyone that tries to help you, a partner, whatever it is. How does this kind of manifest? How is this manifesting for you right now, if at all? And then how is the resistance impacting you and your goals? So I find that being able to look at these types of resistances through the lens of archetypal energy is very helpful. And I developed what I call the resistance archetypes over many years of coaching and over many years of working closely with clients and really observing, you know, what had been happening for them and really figuring out ways to help them move forward even when they were just in the thick of resistance. An archetype is an energy that your client takes on or a way of acting or being or experiencing a certain situation. The resistance archetype or the resistance energy that they take on, you can think of it this way. It's almost like a mask that your client puts on as a response to their fear around executing or achieving their goal. It's an energy, but it's an energy that's not necessarily who your client is. In most cases, it's actually not who your client is. It's just that when your client reacts to fear, she puts on this mask or takes on this way of being. And in most cases, she's probably not even aware that she's doing it. She's so in it that it just feels real. It just feels like, yeah, of course it's the coach's fault. Or, yeah, of course everything is harder for me. She doesn't question it. Now, here's an important piece that I really want you to get. Even the best coaches, the most masterful coaches, from time to time, are going to encounter clients who step into a resistance archetype. So if you've got clients that are in some resistance archetypes, it doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. So why is it that even the best coaches are going to have clients that step into these archetypes? Because when a client is in the process of growth, fear is likely to come up. When in a couple of classes, when we get to the Befriend Your Fear process, you'll hear me say that fear is actually a normal, natural part of growth. And in fact, when my clients go into a little bit of fear, I am kind of happy because I know that we're in a growth process, like something is going right. Now, luckily, most of the time, your clients are probably going to be willing to deal with and face their fears directly instead of going into the resistance archetypes and taking themselves out of the productive coaching path. But it's just unavoidable that sometimes the deeper resistance is going to kick in. And when that deeper resistance kicks in, as I said, it can really put a halt to moving forward in the coaching relationship, and that's why it's so important for you to know how to handle the resistance. And when you do handle it masterfully, even though it's a tough situation at first, it's going to accelerate your client's growth. It's going to open up so much more than you ever could have possibly imagined for them. Now, here's the other thing that I want you to know. This is really important. there are going to be certain times that you won't be able to successfully walk a client past resistance. And this isn't because you're not a good enough coach or communicator or leader or good enough at questioning. It's simply because sometimes the resistance will be so deep that your client isn't going to allow or be willing to look at it with you. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't look at or work with resistance, because 99% of the time, and especially with the tools that I'm giving you, you'll be able to very successfully and powerfully not only walk your client through the resistance, but as I said before, really use the resistance to open up so much growth and transformation. But I do just want to put it out there that none of us, myself included, are magicians. Sometimes a client just isn't ready. And we can't make anyone be ready. We can't make anyone be willing, no matter how good we are as coaches. Our clients have to be willing in order to do the work. And like I said, most of the time they will be, but just every now and again, someone's just not ready. And, you know, as an aside, that's why I always bring this issue up, always, 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 in the enrollment conversation process. I always ask the prospect at some point in the process, are you willing? I know you don't know yet how to work through your fears or your beliefs or your obstacles, but what I do need to know and what you need to know is, are you willing to, right? So, I mean, still people can slip by if they say, yes, I'm willing, but I really like to bring that up as early as the enrollment conversation. And then again, that's also why we look so much at coaching container and coaching energetics and coaching relationship, because, you know, all of those energetics really support the tools to help someone to be willing. But that being said, every now and again, you'll have a client that isn't ready, and no one can move that client without his willingness. So let's take a moment with that for a moment and journal on this. When was a time when you simply weren't ready or you weren't willing to move past your own resistance, either because it wasn't the right time or maybe because you weren't developed enough? So when was a time that you just simply weren't ready or weren't willing to move past your own resistance? What were the judgments or criticisms or beliefs or shame that you created about yourself because of your resistance? What are the judgments or criticisms, beliefs, shame that got created about yourself because of the resistance? Next question. When was a time, either as a coach or even outside of coaching, as a friend, as a partner, as a parent, as a child to your, to your parents, When was the time that you tried to push someone past their resistance when they weren't actually willing or ready to be pushed past it? And what were the results? And then what were the, when you think about that person that you tried to push, but now you can see they just weren't ready, were there any beliefs at the time that you created about that person or that client because of their resistance? And are there judgments that you created towards yourself because you couldn't force them through it? So I just ask these questions so that you can, you know, just understand a little bit more around, you know, that there are going to be times where someone just can't be, you're not going to be able to move them through it every now and again, right? Not often, but sometimes. But that doesn't mean that the coaching has to end completely. But if you try to push them through it and don't honor that they're not ready, lots of judgments are going to be created on all sides, and that can stop the coaching for good. So here's the next important foundational piece around this that I want you to know. When you've got a client that's in resistance, it's critical that you as the coach work with the resistance rather than avoiding the resistance, like just pretending like it's not happening, like I feel like she's being passive aggressive, but I'm just not going to say anything, right? So it's critical that you work with the resistance rather than avoiding it or fighting it. When you avoid it, ignore it, try to run away from it, it'll just get bigger. Like a, you know, just like a sore that gets bigger and bigger. And it's also useless to fight against the resistance because that which you fight just gets stronger. It's just to fight resistance is just as unproductive as pretending it's not there. If you want to disempower resistance, if you want to take the power out of the resistance, then as the coach, what you want to do is meet your client's resistance face to face and lovingly work with it. A big mistake that I see coaches or practitioners, healers often make is that they join their clients in being judgmental of resistance instead of working with it. And that never really works out in the way that you want it to. Okay, so let's pause here for a moment, because I know that each thing I'm saying is really big. We still have a lot to cover today. I'm going to give you a four-part formula for navigating the types of resistances that we're talking about today, and then I'm going to go unpack each of the resistance archetypes and explain all about each one and how to handle each one. But before I get there, I just want to check in and see, what are you hearing so far? What's starting to click for you so far? What feels important? Star two. I'd love to hear one or two takeaways so far. What ideas are being sparked? What are you seeing? Are you guys with me? My computer's also a little slow. Does anybody have any questions so far? Kelsey.
Hi, Joanna. I mean, I love this topic. I just did an enrollment call yesterday that I definitely felt resistance come up, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know how to handle this yet. But for me, what's coming up also is I had a coach maybe a year or so ago that I ended up in a lot of resistance to. And it's so interesting because a lot of what you said, like, you know, she wasn't doing enough, and I just didn't like some of the, you know, I don't know, it just didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels so real when you're in it. And some of it, I mean, even looking back with this different hat, some of it I feel like is true. Like, it just wasn't my...
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I'm glad you're bringing it up. So sometimes it is true, right? Like, sometimes
right.
It is true that the coach isn't doing enough, right? Or that, you know, this or that, or, you know, from all of the examples I gave. The difference here with the resistance I'm talking about here, I'm glad you're asking this so I can really clarify it, is when the client is being passive aggressive about it.
Okay.
In an underhanded way and not talking about it. When the client is being passive aggressive about it, or kind of like, you know, in an underhanded way, then the coach and the client, it's harder to have a conversation about what's working and what's not working. And to either shift things so that the client can get what they need or look at whatever underlying fears there are. Does that help clarify what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and I'm trying to wear both hats right now, both as the client who last year was in resistance and now as the coach. So as the coach, as the client, you don't know that necessarily you're in resistance, and so you don't even know, like, hey, we should probably talk about this. Or you might know it, but you might have a lot of fear about it. So as the coach, how do you bring it up if it's not
we're getting there. That's what the whole rest of the call
okay.
is. Yeah,
right.
I'm going to go step by step in general and then unpack each of the most common, like, archetypes, the ways that it can show up. So we'll get there. I just want to make sure that the piece you're bringing up makes sense, because it is a really important piece. The type of resistance that I'm talking about, again, like when I say green light, I mean, you know, a client can come to a call and be like, oh, Kelsey, like, I'm just so annoyed with myself. I loved the strategy that we came up with last week, but every time I went to blah, 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 I got really scared. Can we look at that? Right? That's great. Like, that's still resistance, but that's
right.
A resistance that you have a green light on. The kind of resistance I'm talking about is, like, the client comes to the call and they're just like, yeah, I didn't do it. I didn't like that plan. I don't know why, or like this isn't working for me, or those kinds of resistances. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Got it.
Good. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay. So let's continue on, and. Like I said, first I'm going to share with you a four-part formula that you can use. And like, this is going to be a general overarching formula that you can use when client resistance comes up. And then from there, we'll unpack each of the archetypes and get even more specific. So this four-part formula, it's very simple, but it's very effective. So I'll share it with you, and then we'll look at the specific archetypes and look how to apply it to each. So step one, when you see resistance coming up, lovingly call it out. Lovingly call it out. So what this means is this is about creating awareness, so that you can bring the behavior and energy behind the behavior out of your client's blind spot and into the light, so that your client can see what's happening instead of just being in these resistance behaviors and being upset and not knowing why. So first step is to call it out. And the loving part is so important. This goes back to not fighting the resistance, right? You actually want to even love that, love up the resistance. So, you know, for example, lovingly calling something out might sound like this. You know, Joanna, I've noticed that over the last three sessions, you keep on showing up, you know, at least 10 minutes late. And I know that that's not like you. You're always so punctual and so much on time. And I'm wondering if the lateness isn't just because, I know you've got a lot going on, but I'm wondering if it's not just because you're so busy, but if there's some fear or resistance that's going on for you. Or lovingly call it out might sound like this. You know, Joanna, I'm sensing right now, and I feel like I actually sensed it, you know, this whole session, and tell me if I'm getting this wrong, but I feel like you're upset with me. It almost feels like you're blaming me for that enrollment conversation not going the way that you wanted. Am I getting that right? So lovingly call it out. But after you call it out, you want to follow it up with, and even before asking, am I getting it right? But you want to follow it up immediately with step two, which is to normalize what you're calling out. You want to tell your client that if that's the case, whatever they're doing is normal, right? So you're showing up late for calls because there's some kind of fear or resistance. It's totally normal. It happens when someone, you know, is afraid of X happening, right? Whatever it is. Or, you know, getting upset at me because of your enrollment conversations, that's totally normal. It can happen, right? The reason why you want to normalize the behavior is so that your client doesn't feel ashamed about the behavior, so that they don't feel like a freak or a weirdo, or so that they don't feel like there's no way that they can move forward because they're in this resistance. If there's something that is true about most human beings, is that even when they're making someone else wrong, like in their head, even when they're blaming someone else, they're also always blaming themselves in a way. Shame is something that comes very easily for human beings, and self-judgment for most human beings too. When a client is in a place of shame, it's that much harder to work with the resistance, and it's that much harder for them to feel open to you and to trust you. So you want to be loving, and you want to make them feel like their behaviors are okay. Not okay, like in the long run, that it's okay to continue to happen, but that it's normal and that it's workable and you can work with this. Step three, once you lovingly call it out and normalize it, then you want to explore the fear underneath the resistance. And then finally, you want to provide or co-create a solution for moving forward beyond the resistance behavior. Now, there's another step, hidden step in here that happens well before even the lovingly calling it out. And that's back to energetics. It always goes back to energetics. You can't do any of the steps I just shared with you unless you've got a strong container first. Right? Because again, if you don't have that strong container, there's not enough trust or vulnerability or willingness on the part of your client to be receptive to all of this, but honestly, on your part too, to be even willing to do any of this. So the energy, I just can't, you know, I'm always going to come back to those energetics because they're so important. They create that level playing field that allows you to even have this conversation without a client going into shame. The energetics provide the mutual respect so that this exchange can happen. The energetics allow you as the coach to be curious about what's happening instead of going into your own resistance or your own triggers. And, you know, it also helps you truly understand the nature of resistance. Because here's a very important piece in all of this. The more that you as the coach can understand that if this type of resistance comes up, that you haven't done anything wrong and that your client hasn't done anything wrong and that the coaching isn't wrong, then the cleaner you're going, as the coach, you're going to be able to address it. What can oftentimes happen is that if our clients go to these places, we get triggered, right, because we feel like we've done something wrong, or they're not going to forgive us, or they're not going to get it, or you know, wherever it is that we go. And when we're in that place, the energetics are off, and we can't actually move through all of this powerfully, right? So we really just want all of the energetics to be there, and we want to also keep on coming back to the knowing that if resistance like this comes up, it's all good. It is normal. It can be dealt with. It doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong as the coach or that there's anything wrong with your client. All right, so that's the general formula. Let's get really detailed and specific now and apply it to some of the most common resistance archetypes that I've identified. But before we go further, let's do a little piece of self-reflection. We already started this a little earlier in the call, but I want to just go a little bit deeper with this so that you can understand a little bit more when I talk about taking on a mask. So here's a question. I'm going to ask the question, and then I'll give you some examples, and then you can answer it. So do you have a certain way of being or reacting to stressful situations or potential growth situations that feels almost like you're taking on another persona? I'm going to ask the question again, and then I'll give you examples. So when you are confronted with either a stressful situation or a potential but scary growth situation, do you have a certain way of reacting or being with another person, with a coach, with friends, romantic partner, et cetera, anyone out there? So I'll give you an example from my personal life. When I get scared in my personal life, you know, maybe it's I get worried about the kids, like something that really scares me, or I don't know, the household, whatever it is, I use my husband kind of like as a foil to play off of. And I become really negative. I'm like negative Nelly, even more than that. I'm just such a victim with him. And this victim of archetype, this archetype victim that I take on, it's pretty foreign to, I know it very well because it's my MO. I go there when I get scared or uncomfortable about something, anxious about something. But it's foreign to me in the sense that it's not really part of my authentic energy or my empowered energy. It's really different from who I am when I'm in my power. When I go to this place, I get really negative. I get really defeated. And I feel negative and defeated on my own, but it comes out, it expresses itself even more strongly when I interact with my poor husband. I just end up dumping all over him. And I've gotten better at this over the years because I've realized this is my resistance archetype. When I get really scared or really nervous or something feels risky, I go into this victim, negative, defeated place, and I use my husband even, like, he doesn't really do anything to activate it in me, but because I feel safe with him, as hopefully your clients do with you as coach, it's like I take on that mask and the energy, and then I just dump it all out, right? So again, I've gotten better the more I've gotten aware, but it still comes up every now and again, but I can name it really quickly. But it's almost like when I'm in it, when I'm wearing the mask, when I'm in the energy, there's a part of me that would say, oh my God, Joanna, like, who, stop it. Like, you're being so negative. You're being so defeatist. Like, just stop. I could be aware enough to even see it, but I was so deeply in the energy that I was so compelled. I couldn't allow myself to stop. Here's another example. I used to work with someone who, whenever she got really uncomfortable about taking a risk, or, you know, whenever things started to feel uncomfortable, she would go into deep confusion. This was one of the smartest women I have ever known, one of the most articulate women I have ever known, someone who is, like, one of the quickest learners I have ever met, brilliant person, but her resistance archetype was the confused one. When she got scared, she was like a deer in headlights. She had no idea what was going on. It was like all of her wisdom and all of her smarts and all of her articulateness and all of her clarity just out the window. She was inside of a different energy. It was a reaction to the fear. I'll give you one more example. I once had a client, her resistance archetype was to become not exactly the know-it-all, but like I've already worked through all of that. You know, I don't need to take a look at this because, you know, I'm already perfect in all ways, right? Her normal self was always willing to look deeper inside of who she was. But when we would hit on something really, really, really big that felt a little scary, it was like, nope, I've already got that under control, right? And I'd have to work with that archetype a bit. So I want you to take a look inside of yourself. How do you react when you're not in your highest self? Most of the time, hopefully, you're responding from your highest self. But when you're not, how do you react? Who do you become? And is that a pattern for you? Is that historic? Can you see that this happens? You know, it's not just like a one-off that you become that, whatever that reactionary type is, that resistance archetype is. Have you done that in more than one place in your life? It's just good to note for yourself. You know, do you become this blamey blame and blame the other person? Or do you become the like, oh, this is just so stupid, I'm above all of this? Or I'm so confused, or the victim, right? Like, where is your go-to place? Just good to know. All right. So let's take a look at the archetypes. The first one I want to take a look at is the victim. This is the one that I know the best. So here are just some examples. If your client goes into the resistance archetype of the victim, here are some examples of how it might sound. I just couldn't do it because I just couldn't get my internet to work for like 3 weeks. Or I couldn't get it done. I went on vacation, and then my best friend visited, and then, you know, like the pet ate the homework kind of situation. Or it could sound like, you know, the first people I invited into an enrollment conversation said no, so I am never going to fill this program. I just might as well give up now. Those first three people said no, it's done. Or if you hear things like, I know other people can do that, but I'm just not the kind of person that has the capacity to do that. No one in my family has ever been able to do that. We suck that way. We can't make that happen. Or I give up. I'm just not going to do Facebook anymore. It's not for me. Their algorithms keep on changing. I just give up on all social media, just all of it. Can't get this right. Sometimes the victim, and this is another one that I know really well, sometimes the victim can sound like, I just never have enough time. I know I committed to that, but I just never have enough time. Time always gets the best of me. It might sound like, it doesn't matter what I do or what actions I take, I'm never going to make that happen because I just don't know the right people. There are some people out there that know the right people. They have the right connections. It's not going to happen for me because I just don't have the connections and it sucks and I'm just going to give up. So for the victim, you know, those are just a couple of examples, but hopefully what you're getting from those examples is that for the victim, everyone and everything is against them. They can't ever move forward because there's always something that's out of their control that's sabotaging them or messing them up or standing in their way. The victim feels that she is powerless to the circumstances in her life. She blames anything outside of herself for what she's not doing or not achieving. And because of the blaming of things outside of themselves, the victim always kind of has an excuse for not taking responsibility for themselves and for their actions. Now, I'm going to be willing to bet that every single person on this call has encountered the victim, either in yourself or in someone else, at least once before. And so just, you know, ask yourself without judgment, you know, does the victim ever show up for you? It's an important question, not just for self-awareness, but you've heard me say numerous times before, energy follows energy. And it's so important in the coaching container. If you know that you have a tendency to show up as the victim, you want to check that filter for yourself. Because if not, energy follows energy, your client may be likely to either follow you in that energy, that victim energy, or to show up as the opposite of it, kind of like the overpowering one, right? So how can you help your client if they step into the victim archetype? And what can you do, especially so that as the coach, you don't get stuck hearing from the client, I can't, you know, all of the I can'ts and not taking responsibilities and just believing them. Or you don't get stuck soothing them, like, oh my gosh, of course you couldn't do it, right? All of that. I mean, of course, there's a time and a place for soothing, and there's a time and a place for something really couldn't happen, but you want to be able to move your clients out of this pattern. So, first of all, and this is all part of, you know, lovingly calling out the victim. That's step one. Number one, you need to be able to just even identify that the victim is there, like as the coach, right, to be able to see it. So you want to be listening for excessive excuses or excessive blaming of others. You want to be listening for, is your client mentioning next steps or looking how to solve problems, or is there just no mention of problem solving at all, not wanting to look at problem solving or next steps, but just stick in the it's not working. If there's no desire to look at action steps, chances are, you know, that victim might be there. You want to be listening for, is there a sense of powerlessness? Is there a sense of resignation that a situation is never going to change and that they have to go down? You know, they're going to be taken down because of it. Listen for, is there catastrophic negativity? If so, the victim might be at play. Is there a commitment to helplessness and disempowerment? You know, even if shitty situations happen, there can be a commitment to getting empowered, or there can be a commitment to disempowerment, right? So first thing you want to do is identify, like have a sense, like, oh, I think the victim might be at play here. And then the very next step, before you even say a word, you want to love on your client's victim. Like big time, have compassion for that one and love it. It's so important, right? Because we can so easily go into judgment. We want to really love and have compassion. Then from there, you can lovingly call out the victim, and you want to move through it tenderly. So here's one way to lovingly call out the victim. You can say, you know, it sounds to me like you're saying that you'll never be able to do it because you just don't have enough time. Am I getting that right, that you'll never be able to do it? Something just as simple as that can be really effective, because you're point blank calling it out, and your client can see how extreme they're being, right? They might be saying, I'm never going to get it done because I don't have enough time. I just don't have enough time. But then when they hear their coach say, you know, I just want to make sure I'm getting this right, are you saying that you're never going to be able to get this done because you just don't have enough time? It can help them see the mask that they're wearing. When you mirror back the extreme idea or like the extreme existence and ask if you're getting it right, it can open up a lot of awareness and take your client a little bit out of that energy of the victim. Here's another way to create awareness for the victim. You can say something like this. It's so interesting because what I hear you saying doesn't match up with what I know about you. I hear you saying that nobody is ever going to hire you, but what I know about you is that you're smart and you're resourceful and you're a powerful woman, and I know that you absolutely can get hired. So what's actually going on here? Right, so in this example, you're creating awareness, you're lovingly calling it out by pointing out the mismatch between who your client is versus how they're acting in this mask. And you're reminding them of who they really are, which can help kind of snap them out of the victim mask a bit. And then this can allow them to go deeper and actually look at what's actually going on in the moment. Here's another example of how to lovingly call it out, create awareness around the victim. I notice that every time you resolve to try a new X, right, whatever X is, to try a new marketing technique or yoga pose, whatever it is, I notice that every time you resolve to try a new yoga pose, on our very next session, it's like there's always an outside force that's getting in your way and keeping you from practicing it. Why do you think that is? Right, so again, this is pointing out the pattern. And then they can take a closer look. I'll give you one other example of creating awareness for the victim. I really hear that situation after situation is stopping you from achieving your goal, right, whatever the goal is, you're working on them, you can name it. I really hear that situation after situation is keeping you from achieving your goal. Are there other places in your life where this has happened, where it's simply been out of your power to get something done? Right. So again, this is another way of creating awareness around the pattern, lovingly calling it out. So once you call out, lovingly call out the victim, create awareness, right? And again, like I've been saying, just the awareness alone is going to just knock your client a bit out of the energy of it because they're going to, all of a sudden they're going to see it. It's not in their blind spot, and so it's not going to take over all of who they are anymore, but their higher wisdom, their higher conscious will be able to separate themselves from this energy, from this mask. So from there, you want to go into normalizing the situation and the resistance. And that can sound something like this. I can completely understand why you would be feeling this way because dot, 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 and explain why you understand they would feel this way. Or you can say something like, I know that sometimes that can happen when people are moving towards their goals. I see it happen all the time. Or you can say something like, it makes total sense that you're feeling this way because dot, 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 right, whatever it is. So in other words, part of normalizing is validating. Validation is so important. You don't want to validate that they stay in that energy, but you want to validate why that energy would come up for them. So when you can validate and normalize again, it will just help your client loosen up around all of this. Now, from there, you may go into that step three of just having a exploring more how the victim has shown up in their life and all of that. We'll get to that exploration when we get to befriending your fear, because now you have the green light, right? Now that you've lovingly called it out and you've normalized, you can say, you know, are you willing to take a deeper look at what's going on here for you? You've got the green light and you can handle it as any other kind of resistance in a way. And then here are just some other, like when you get to step four, co-creating solutions, here are some great questions specifically for someone who can fall into victim archetype. How can you take more ownership of this situation? This is a great question for the victim because the victim tends to not feel like they have agency or that they can take ownership, right? So it just addresses that right on. Here's another question. If you were to feel fully empowered here, what would you do differently? Again, the victim often feels like the world is against them, right? So this question remedies that. If you were to feel fully empowered here, what would you do differently? Or what else could you do here? I really hear that you tried three times and failed, and it feels like there are no other prospects. But if you really wanted to achieve your goal, would you just stop here and say it didn't work, or would you do something else? What would you do? You, as the coach, you can also suggest a solution, right? Now, you don't want to suggest a solution before you've created, lovingly called out the pattern, you know, lovingly called out the resistance and normalized and explored, because whatever you suggest, the client is still going to be in the energy of the victim. They're not going to want to hear it. But after you've done all of that, you could suggest a solution. They might be more open to hearing it. Would you be willing to do X this week? Would you be willing to tweak your copy in this way? Another question that's great for the victim is, what if you had more power here than you think you do? Or what are some of the choices that you have here, right? So that they can see that they have choice. Or if you knew the world was conspiring to support you, what action would you take next? Again, all of these specifically for the victim. All right, let's look next at the resistance archetype of the judge. And I'm going to try to move through these pretty quickly. All right, the judge. So the judge can sometimes be related to the victim. There can sometimes be crossover and intersection, but there are subtle differences between the two. So the judge is always judging, either him or herself, right? I suck. Or if you're doing yoga, I'm just not flexible enough. Or the judge is judging other people. Other people are doing something wrong, right? I couldn't get my husband, what's my note here? You know, I couldn't get this job done because my sister, blah, blah, blah. Or the judge might say to you, I didn't do that homework because you didn't explain it well enough last week. Or the judge is the one that would be saying in one way or another, usually not this clearly, you didn't pay enough attention to my needs, or you were wrong in that suggestion. Or they may even say in the moment as you suggest something, nope, that suggestion is dead wrong. I'm not going to do that. So first, just to be clear, and I think this is part of what Kelsey was bringing up before, you always want to be in open conversation with your clients, right? You can suggest something, or you're going to do things wrong sometimes as the coach, right? Or not meet a need. If your client can have a productive conversation about that, if they can say to you, I know you're suggesting that, but that doesn't really resonate for me because XYZ, can we look at something else? That's not the archetype of the judge. That's having a real conversation with mutual respect and collaboration and co-creation where the coach isn't always right. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is when it's more underhanded. And the only way that you as the coach are going to be able to identify if it's the normal, just like open conversation versus when it feels like the client is in deep judgment of you or even angry at you, the only way you're going to know the difference is if there's a level playing field, right? If you feel, as the coach, if you feel good enough, confident, if you trust yourself, then you're going to be able to hear the difference between normal, like, oh, I didn't meet her needs and she wants to talk about it, or that wasn't a great suggestion, versus, oh, she's in deep judgment of me. But if you're not feeling confident or you're not feeling good enough, you might think that the normal conversation is the judge archetype, like you're just going to get triggered, right, by any of it. So how do you know when a client is in that archetype of the judge? Well, again, if there's excessive criticism of you or themselves or others, if there's an energy of bitterness, or passive aggressiveness. If you sense that your client is looking for a way out of working towards her goal by making judgments. If you sense that your client feels that you're not good enough or illegitimate. And again, energetics are so important here, right? Because if it's just a standard, you're not feeling good enough about yourself, you might mistake that here. If the client tends to have a demand for perfectionism in themselves, but even more so in others. So take a moment. Does the judge ever show up as your mask? Do you tend to get excessively critical of others, particularly when you're uncomfortable or being challenged or in a situation that stresses you out? Sometimes I go there. Like I'll go into victim, but I can also go into like excessive judgment if I'm feeling stressed of others, if I'm feeling stressed out. Does the judge ever show up for you when you're challenged or in a growth phase or just something uncomfortable happens? Do you tend to demand perfectionism? Do you tend to look for a way out of goals by making judgments? Do you tend to feel like no one is good enough? People are illegitimate. Again, just good to know for yourself, right? So if you see that your client has fallen under the mask of the judge, again, first thing, love their judge. Have compassion. That's the only way that you'll be able to move forward masterfully and effectively. And then from there, you want to create awareness. So here are some ways that you can help create awareness. You'll lovingly call out the judge, create awareness. One way is, it sounds to me like you're being really hard on yourself right now. Does that resonate for you? Do you notice that? Or here's another way you can create awareness, lovingly call it out. And this is more if the client hasn't actually outright judged themselves or you, but you just sense it in their energy. It's like more backhanded. You can say, you know, what do you notice about the tone of your voice right now? Or you can say, what do you notice about your energy towards me and our conversation right now? Or you can use, I'm hearing that, or it sounds like. So, for example, I'm hearing that you feel I didn't notice you enough during our conversation last week. Am I getting that right? Or it sounds to me that you feel I'm steering you in the wrong direction. Am I getting that right? And then those kinds of questions, I'm hearing it sounds like, can provide an entree into some deeper, you know, exploration. Have you had that feeling before? Or you can say, that wasn't my intention at all, and I'm wondering if you experience this in other places. Here's another way you can create awareness for the judge. I notice that when I make suggestions that really stretch you, you tend to get judgmental of those suggestions. Does that resonate for you? And if so, do you know this response from other areas in your life? So after you create awareness, then you want to move on to validating and normalizing, right? And all the same examples that I gave earlier for the victim, they apply here, right? It's just about validating. I can completely understand why. I know that this can sometimes happen when people are moving forward. It makes total sense, right? So you want to normalize, you want to validate. And then when you move into exploration or next steps, forward movement, one thing you want to remember about the judge is that, just, you know, for when we looked at the victim, right, like the antidote was empowerment and opening up choices for the victim, right, because the victim feels like they're disempowered and they don't have choices and they're helpless. Well, for the judge, the antidote is self-love and self-acceptance and love of others and acceptance of others. So questions like, what would self-compassion look like here, you know, if they've been judging themselves? Questions like, when you're critical of others, what feeling or thought is it distracting you from? Questions like, okay, well, what parts of the strategy that I suggested or that we came up with together have legs? Which are the parts of it that resonate for you? Let's sift out the parts that do and the parts that don't. And then another thing that can really help move your client out of judge and just into that highest self, that one of, with the love and the self-acceptance, is to lead them through a visualization to connect with their highest self. All right, let me pause here for a moment. I still want to talk about the confused one and the needy one. I just want to see if there are any questions. Star two. I know I'm giving you guys a lot of information. all at once. All right, so let's keep on going. The next archetype to be aware of can come up pretty commonly is the confused one, or the flake, or the disconnected one. I feel like they're all connected, the confused one, the flake, the disconnected one. So this one, their fear in moving forward shows up as being confused or lost or ignorant of the process of moving forward. The confused one is someone who's normally really smart but just not getting it, or showing up as ditzy or disorganized. Their fear of moving forward gets in the way of them retaining the information that they need in order to move forward. Or sometimes this is less the confused one, more like the flake or the disconnected one. The fear can show up through simply not showing up for sessions, not bringing themselves fully present to a session or a task at hand, becoming MIA for weeks at a time. So, and sometimes, you know, not always, but for the confused one or the flake or the disconnected one, it can come from a fear of facing reality, right? Like whatever they're going after feels really scared, or whatever uncomfortable situation has come up feels really scary, and there's a fear of facing the reality. So does this one ever show up for you? Do you ever move into the confused one, the flake, or the disconnected one? Like it's just so scary to face whatever, you disconnect. Again, you're not making that conscious decision, right? It's almost something that happens unconsciously for you. So I'm not going to move through for this one, the creating awareness, the normalizing. I think you guys get the point on that, and we've looked already so much. We had a whole creating awareness module. Where I want to jump to is the antidote or the co-creating solutions for the confused one or the flake or the disconnected one. Because the antidote for this one is to get comfortable with what is. So when I'm talking about antidotes for each of these, like this is the thing as the coach, you want to help once you've lovingly called it out and normalized and validated, then this is what you want to start moving the client towards. So for the confused one, the flake, the disconnected one, you know, in your head as the coach, you know the antidote most of the time for them is going to be to help them get comfortable with reality, to help that desensitize the fear and to build resilience. That's really what the confused one and the flake need. So some questions that can help them with that are, what would be scary about fully comprehending this situation? Right, that question, the reason why it's good for the confused one is because it helps them name what they're actually scared of, instead of just disconnecting from facing the reality. Or another question for this one would be, what do you think your disorganization is covering up? Or what do you think your disorganization is distracting you from? Again, helping them face that reality and get comfortable with that reality and desensitize the fear around it. What are you scared might happen if you were to fully show up here? Right, because they haven't been showing up. What are you scared might happen if you were to fully show up here? Stretch, risk, or die. If you guys remember that from strategizing, that's a great exercise for the confused one, the flake, the disconnected one. Again, after you lovingly call it out, create the awareness, normalize, validate, because, again, we're working to desensitize them, to get comfortable with what is, to get comfortable in the stretch. Helping the confused one or the flake break things down into smaller baby steps is sometimes what they need, because they've been so overwhelmed, they like with all the details and how big the thing is or whatever it is, they've just disconnected from the situation. But if you can get at just like little baby pieces, just one thing at a time, it will help desensitize them. All right, next archetype I call the needy one. The needy one. This person is normally a very self-sufficient person, but when they go into fear or when a really uncomfortable situation happens for them, they feel like they can't do anything on their own, and they need a lot of you. They're constantly asking for more feedback or more time from you. They want you to hold their hand for every single little thing, even for things you know that they just do not, they don't need your hand for that. The needy one is one who has stopped, you know, is not trusting herself as much as she could. It might show up as that she also has an excessive need for validation too, right? She's constantly like fishing. And you know, I'm so big on celebrating and acknowledging. It's such an important piece of coaching. But the needy one is like one who like, it just goes right through her. She needs more and she needs more and she needs more. So the antidote for this one is to help her know that she is self-sufficient. But what's important, just what you in your mind as the coach need to know, is that you want her to help her know that she's self-sufficient, but also that she's supported by you, you know, that she has your support. So, because sometimes what can happen with a needy one is when you try to help her see that she's self-sufficient, she gets scared that means that you don't want to be there to support her, right? So you want to, like, move forward with both of those at the same time. Let her know that you're so there to support her, she's so supported, but also that she really is so much more self-sufficient than she can see in that moment. So again, I'm not going to focus on creating, lovingly calling out this one or validating, because those are all the same creating awareness skills. But let's look at some of the steps 3 and 4. I trust you to take this step on your own. What would it take for you to trust yourself? Right, again, because the needy one needs to work on her self-trust. Or you can explore self-sufficiency, right? What does being self-sufficient mean to you? What are the ways that you're already so self-sufficient in this situation? What would you need to believe in order to step more into your self-sufficiency? Another way to move forward with the needy one is to say something like this. And again, this is all of these pieces are after the awareness has been created, right? But I have said before something like this. Our relationship is an opportunity for you to find the sweet spot between being supported while also standing on your own 2 feet. What would that look like for you in this relationship? Right? So actually using the coaching relationship to let her know that it's a practice place, to feel like she can get the support. The needy one always needs to know that the support is there, right? But that she doesn't need to, like, hang on the support all the time, and laying that out and saying, so what would it look like for you in this relationship, in this container, if you could find that sweet spot between being supported by me while also standing on your own 2 feet? All right. Let's pause here for a moment. I know we have just a few more minutes left, or maybe even not a few more minutes left, but I want to see if there's any questions or any takeaways. I'd love to hear at least one takeaway. Just so I know you guys are with me. Tina.
Hi, Joanna. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So this is really awesome because I literally just, I think I probably acted out about two of these last night with my husband.
It's the people that we feel the safest with that we do act them out with, which is why, also if it happens with our clients, it does mean that we're doing something right, too.
Really? Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your experience, because I definitely go into victim archetype in my own self, and definitely, like you said, who I'm most comfortable with, which is mostly my husband. And so I did catch myself in that. And then it was really interesting because I never really ever viewed myself as the needy one, but I definitely, I definitely think that I do go into a little bit of that. When I go into fear, I get really scared and I become the little girl who, like, oh my God, like, I don't know what to do. And can you tell me what to do? And, you know, and it's really good for me to see that, because I see a lot of my clients going there.
Yeah.
And so, like, so if I have that in me, obviously I have a lot of inner work to do, but how do I better navigate my client when I do see that showing up, because I have it in me?
Yeah, so again, you just want to follow the 4 steps, right? So the first is to lovingly call it out and create awareness around it, right? So, you know, Joanna, I notice, like, even though you are a powerful, grown, mature woman who's also a mother, tell me if I'm getting this right, but I notice that sometimes when we're about to, like, you're about to stretch or something uncomfortable happens, you go to that needy place inside of yourself. Like, you feel like you aren't that empowered woman. Am I getting that right? You know, resonating, right? And then from there, normalizing it. I so know what you mean. That happens for me, just so you know, right? And normalize it, and how it's just so normal to happen when you're in a growth phase. And then from there, you can ask some of the questions that I offered and others, you know, do exploration around it.
Okay. So it's okay to offer that we also go through that ourselves and maybe give a quick little example to validate.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, most of the time when I'm normalizing, I'm using myself as an example. I think, like, one of the reasons why I'm a good coach is because I do have so many issues and paranoia. Like, I can understand so well. But, and part of my job is to normalize it when it comes up for my clients, not so that they stay stuck in it, but so that it takes the shame out and they can actually start working with it in a different way.
That's it. It's taking the shame out. I think that's the key that you hit. Yeah. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you being so transparent. It makes me feel so much more human. So,
you're welcome.
Beautiful.
You're welcome. Good. Justine.
Hello.
Hi.
So I noticed that I have some of each of these four, and so I'm wondering if that is common, because, I mean, some, I feel a little bit stronger than others, but I definitely noticed that I can relate to each one of them at times.
Yeah.
So
totally common. Totally common. You're not alone in that at all. And I definitely, like, for me, the dominant is the victim, but I can definitely pick up on the other pieces too, for sure. So So just because you've identified one with a client doesn't mean that they may not show up as another. That's why I'm kind of laying them all out.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, you know, if people typically tend to lean towards, you know, heavy towards the one that we're looking for in our clients versus like,
I mean,
you know,
in
can
my
they all show
experience,
up?
There is one that is more of the go-to place for people. But that being said, other pieces can crop up sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. This is a really great call for me, by the way.
So glad. Yeah. All right, good. Jeannie.
Hi, Joanna. Am I on?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. Thank you. Sorry. It's hard to know from my little phone here in my house. I think this is really getting to the nitty-gritty of it all because, you know, places where we can be triggered and brings up all our own stuff and all that. But the question I really have right now is there really one big distinction in your mind between all the shadow archetypes and the resistance archetypes or any? Or you just break it out differently for us as coaches to have it as a technique or whatever?
Exactly. So for those of you that were at the shadow retreat, each of the archetypes that I mentioned today are shadows. But I'm breaking those specific ones out, you know, because you don't have to, when it shows up with you, like you don't necessarily have to go through all of the shadow pieces. You can use all the tools I taught you in the retreat if a client shows up in these 100%. But you can, with these guys, you can also kind of like shortcut through in the ways that I said. You might later on have to do more of the shadow work. But yeah, these are all versions of different shadows, 100%. That answer your question?
So if I could say that maybe here you're kind of addressing it as like the first steps to take when you notice something's coming up. You don't know what it is. You're not thinking shadow. You're not thinking deep-seated childhood, whatever. You're just thinking right now we have this problem, so let's see what we can do with it. And if it continues or it really reveals a big, 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 deep thing, then it's more appropriate to go to some other kind of technique.
Exactly. So these are ways to identify it. And then if you move through the steps I gave on today's call, you know, a lot of the time they're going to be resolved. You don't have to, like we learned in the retreat, lean into the victim, lean into the judge, right? A lot of it will be resolved. If it persists, then you want to move on to the big guns that I gave you from the shadow retreat. That makes sense?
Okay. Yes, it really does.
Yeah.
And I also think that if you identify the main one, I mean, like once we get awareness about our main one, then our secondary ones are going to show up. So it's like just repeat until, you know,
until
the wash load is clear, until the rinse water is clear, you know?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. This is really, really, really helpful.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear it. I'll stay on. There's a bunch more questions. I'll stay on. Dana.
Hi, Joanna. Hopefully you can hear me. I'm outside and it's very windy, but I have headphones on.
Yep.
Before the other woman asked the question about having each of these, like there's two that I distinctly notice. And I was thinking of when I did my meditation teacher training and I had to like show up for several weekends and I really started doing the MIA thing a lot there. So I think that was probably that coming up. And I mean, I had an injury came up and then I wasn't showing up and then all of that. So I'm thinking that is what was coming up for me. But the one I see the most when I'm on coaching calls with my business coach, mm-hmm. I think that you said the judge was the one that was like the know-it-all.
A little bit. The know-it-all is a little different. I didn't cover her this call because this comes up more in group work. I look at it as a facilitator. But, yeah, the judge can sometimes be the know-it-all.
Okay, that's what I was trying. Because I do see that coming up more consistently.
Yeah, so that can show up as like she, and it can also show up as like, oh, she doesn't get it, right? She doesn't know me, and that's why she's suggesting that. And, right, sometimes it's true, like Kelsey brought up.
Yeah.
But what I find, the way it shows up sometimes with my clients is they get resistant, they get scared of something, and then they'll say something to me like, well, but you know that I like to market in an authentic way, right? Like implying that I don't, because we've like looked at them maybe doing a video or like whatever, right? And they'll call it out. I'll be like, uh-huh, right? And I'll go through the things and they can see like, oh my gosh, of course I know Joanna markets in an authentic way and she would never suggest something to me that was out of integrity. But I just went into that know-it-all-y judgy place because I got scared.
Yeah, I think I have to explore that more for myself because I do see that coming up a lot. And on one hand, I'm like, I study a lot of things. So I do know, like, you know, I dabble in a lot of things and read a lot of books. So a lot of times I do, that is maybe the case, like, oh, well, maybe I do know this. But I also think it comes up in that shadow place a lot, like exactly like you said, where I'm resisting something. So, so it's fun. It'll be fun to play with it now in the future, trying to like pause and look at it when it does come up.
So much will shift.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Jessica.
Hi, Joanna. Well, first of all, thank you. That was so much what I needed to hear today.
Good.
So a thought and a question. So the thought was, one thing I noticed, and I was curious if this is a thing, is that I think my go-to one is the judge, but I think when people start to call me out on the judge, sometimes I go to the confused one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a backup.
Yep, that is such great awareness. Like, I want you to track that because it'll start to move and shift now that you can see that. That's great.
Yeah. And then the other thing was a question, which is, you mentioned a bunch of times that the first thing you need to do is love the judge or love the victim. And then you also talked about lovingly calling it out, or I guess I was just curious if that first step of loving, if that was basically the same language as the other, or if there was some other language. I just wasn't quite clear.
I meant by that is like in your head as the coach. So, I mean, I'll just say like I am guilty of even, so I teach this like every now and again, someone's victim will come up and I'm just not in the exact right place in that day. And I'll always catch myself now, but I might go to like, ugh, this again, or judging it, right? Like, or getting triggered by it, right? So when I say like love on it, I mean like in your head, take a moment and really love and have compassion for all of your client and for that part of her. That makes sense?
Okay. Thank you. That makes so much sense. That helps a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. Great. Thank you, everyone. Great reflections and great questions. You've got a homework sheet, and I'll also, because I know we're over time, I'll post homework and buddy assignments in our Facebook group so that everyone can get it. As more takeaways and reflections come up, please share them. I want to hear them or any questions, and I'll see you all next Monday on our call with Rhea. Okay, bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.